So my favorite thing is John Quincy Adams decided to keep a journal of every time William Crawford rolled his eyes.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Which,
you know, that's a different level of petty.
Hello and welcome back to The Buck Starts Here, the podcast that digs deep into the juicy stories, power plays, and wild twists that shape the presidencies of the United States. I'm Kyle, the tea to Eric's haba potty, which, funnily enough, is why I never meet him at the beach. Last week, we spent an inordinate amount of time discussing Monroe's stature, but we did finally make it to his presidency, which is supposed to be the focus of today's episode. Before we dive into that, though, last week, we challenged everybody to find the singular mispronounced word, and if you said Desiree, then you nailed it. We'll try to make this week's faux pas a little more original. And if you spot that, post a comment. We'll give you Patreon access for life once we figure out how to do that. Eric, so we made it to the presidency. Did we get to the election? Did we talk about the election at all? No, we didn't talk about the election.
We didn't talk about the election because, you know, kind of what we did talk about is a little how, like, redundant a lot of this is.
Right.
And, because we covered Madison and we covered Jefferson, and he's really a product of, and Monroe's really a product of both. But there's all these little seeds that lead up to his presidency that have nothing to do with Madison, and they have nothing to do with Monroe. Hmm. And so what I wanted to do today was we're going to start about his election, the 1816 election, where he ran against Rufus King. And, you know, this is, so the era of good feeling is, you know, I think sometimes we don't realize where it started. So a lot of people say era of good feeling. It really started like in the second term of Jefferson into Madison. You had a different discussion.
Yeah, it didn't seem very good feeling in any of Jefferson's terms from what I remember.
Oh, no, not Jefferson.
It's kind of hard to have an era of good feeling in the middle of the War of 1812, too. It probably didn't feel that great.
Oh, yeah. And what's funny is when Monroe moved into the White House, he didn't move into the White House. It was all still burnt down in 1817.
Yeah. At some point, I saw that he had a restoration assigned to him. I figured we'd be talking about that at some point, too.
Yeah. So it's funny. He, like, showed up. And this is 3 years after it burnt down, guys. This is not like he showed up immediately after. There's a whole presidential term in between. And it was burnt down. And so he spent a lot of time in Europe. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Kind of setting the stage for who Monroe was. Because other...
embarrassing, isn't it?
Super embarrassing.
Capital? Just a burning ash.
Yeah, and he was and that really goes to the story of Monroe, which is that he's so interesting because there were some really influential there was some really influential legislation domestically, but there's not an interesting domestic story around Monroe because it was the ever good feeling. But it's very good, as you know, as we set the stage and go through the election of 1816, everybody knew Monroe was gonna win. He got 183 electoral votes to King's 34. Like, it's arguably the biggest blowout. He won with a way larger margin than Washington won.
What was the guy's name again? Rufus King, you said?
Rufus King.
How do you not vote for a Rufus?
How do you not vote for somebody with the last name King? Ooh, what if they're just really anti his name? Because President King sounds bad.
Oh, that could be. I was thinking it would be more just Rufus just sounds like a villain.
Pick a random country in the global South, and if somebody told me that their head of state was named President King, I would assume it's a dictatorship.
President King.
President King. I always love when dictators are really into the word president. It's like, why? That's where you draw the line?
It's like the more you put Democrat and Republican in your name of your country, the less likely you are to
have either one of those.
Yes. The Democratic People's Republic of Congo.
So the election is really funny because, like, Monroe is the first nationalist, the first idea we see, and I don't mean nationalism today. Remember, guys, whenever we talk about this stuff, it's all about we're using the terms where they were originally, you know, conceived. It's like, you know, it's like Kyle, you and I talk about a lot. Like, we use the term liberal in this. We don't really use the term conservative in this time period, but liberal in this time period. We're talking about John Locke. We're not talking about, you know, 2025 politics.
No, liberal in this case means that maybe we should stop owning people. And
yeah, that's literally liberals. Like, what if we let people vote and they can buy what they want in the open economy? That's liberals. Right. At this point. And what we're going to see is, again, during this time period and a little later into Monroe's presidency, is England is becoming more like contemporary for their time, more liberal, and they're actually abandoning the concept of mercantilism. Mm-hmm. And that's why you start to see the Monroe Doctrine appear. So he ends up winning. He crashes this guy. Now, what's funny is the two campaign platforms. There was no imagination that Rufus King was going to win. Rufus King was not going to win this election. He knew he wasn't going to win this election. And there wasn't really two political parties. You had the Democratic Republicans, and you had the Federalist Party that was already fading. And the Whig Party hadn't started yet.
Okay, the Whigs weren't. I thought they were starting around this time period, or pretty close to here.
Yep, so these are the seeds of the Whig Party starting to form. You know, a young man in Illinois, in the time Kentucky, because everybody forgets that Abraham Lincoln's from Kentucky. Yeah. And I think that's funny that Illinois is the land of Lincoln. It's like, dude, he wasn't born here. You don't even go here. But the Federalist Party was already...
We have the opposite argument that Quincy has. We don't have the birth certificate, but we got all the buildings.
It's like Braintree versus Quincy. Braintree's always like, we got the birth certificate. We're like, well, we have the houses and death certificates.
Right.
Shout out to Braintree. Actually, big fan of Braintree. Good city. So it's funny. The campaigns are so different. So Monroe was campaigning on this. He was emphasizing national unity. Where Rufus King was kind of like, hey, the Federalist Party's dying. You'd be cool if you vote for me, and that will save the Federalist Party, which is a wild platform. I love it. That is, so he absolutely kicked the absolute crap out of Rufus King. And Rufus King won three, and this is going to come back around, he won three states, Connecticut, Delaware, and Massachusetts.
And how many states?
I believe at the time, hold on, let me look that up. I think there were 16. Let's see, 18, 16.
I suppose, I mean, I could probably look it up too while you're talking.
No. 18, 16, by the election, there was 18. Indiana was December 11th that came in.
What was the most recent one, though? Was it Illinois?
Indiana. Sorry, did I read this right? Louisiana. Yeah, 18, 12 was Louisiana. Wow, there's a big gap between. I didn't realize there was a huge gap between Louisiana. I thought Louisiana came in right after Indiana, but no, it was a 4-year gap.
It was after Ohio.
Yeah, Ohio was 17.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't memorize any of the non-13 colonies. Isn't
gap.
It crazy?
Yeah. When was the purchase actually completed? Like, when did we actually get
1803.
Yeah, so had that for a long time.
Yeah, that's like kind of crazy because that was
actually Ohio was part of that territory, wasn't it?
Kind of. There was a Northwest Ordinance.
Part of it. Yeah, that's right.
Pretty much everything that was part of the Louisiana Purchase, right. If you really go far enough back.
Maybe not Ohio. I might be wrong. Anyway.
After Monroe gets elected, he goes on this tour. All right. And the term era of good feeling hadn't really occurred yet. And he goes on this big tour. He visits all these different places. And everybody loves him. And he gets to Connecticut. And they don't boo him. They're just dead silent. Just his whole speech. Now, you got to imagine this guy's campaigning. People, he's already won. This is a victory lap. Everybody's like, yeah, national unity. Yeah, the continuation of Madison. He's a war hero. This guy got shot in the chest. Well, you know, fighting for the revolution with George Washington.
Crossing the Delaware.
Yeah, like this guy is. Everybody's like, yeah. So he gets there. And Connecticut's just like very, like golf applause with everything. Like nobody's high energy. He leaves. He's like, what the heck was that?
It's because he was 6'2" and a beast of a human being. They were all afraid to boo him. Just clap politely and hope he leaves quietly.
But he eventually makes it to Boston, and he gives a speech, and actually was pretty well received. And even though he didn't win Massachusetts, at this time, Massachusetts is essentially just Boston with how concentrated the population is. Massachusetts' population concentration is still hyper-aggressive today around the greater Boston area, with like something like one in two people in Massachusetts living in essentially the greater Boston outer ring area. And he actually gives a great speech and everybody likes him. And that's when one of the local Boston newspapers coined the term, this is the beginning of the era of good feeling. So if you want to be really, really, and I know our listeners are like this. So if you really want to be, well, technically the era of good feeling begins in 1817. It has nothing to do with Madison or Jefferson. If you want to be pedantic.
I do. I will take that. I will declare that as the start of the era of good feeling.
I like it. So his running mate was this guy, Daniel Tompkins. Daniel Tompkins, oh my God. Daniel Tompkins would fit in beautifully with today's politics, just for the record. I mean, he's one of those interesting... Vice presidents are honestly more interesting than the presidents because you wonder how these guys get within, you know, one bad day of running the United States. Right? So he gets this guy from New York, and you know we'll cover this later. But eventually, Monroe has a very close association with New York that I don't think a lot of people know. Mm-hmm. So Daniel Tompkins, he's the governor of New York from 1807 to 1817. It's funny, him and Monroe just get along good. Every source I could read, it was just like, this wasn't like political factionization. This isn't protege-mentor relationship like you saw with Jefferson and, you saw with like a Jefferson. I know Madison wasn't Jefferson's vice president, but that same like relationship, yeah. We don't really see that. Instead, you see two guys who seem to like each other enough to wonder how that conversation went. If Monroe was just like, hey, I'm thinking of running for president. You want to like tag along? And Daniel Tompkins was like, yeah, dude, that sounds kind of cool.
Is Monroe just like a Tom Brady kind of?
Oh, he's a bro.
He's a bit of a bro, but he's actually kind of smart. Really, he's well thought out.
Yeah, it stinks that Monroe's like intelligence gets compared to Madison and Jefferson's unfavorably.
Right. It's not a fair comparison to many people.
Yeah, and also, I think he's smarter than Jefferson, to be honest with you. Like, we also don't know that much about Monroe's like words between different places because of how poorly his records were kept in the immediate aftermath. But I'm a big believer that one of the best signs of intelligence is that you hire other intelligent people around you.
I'd agree with that.
And he has what is still today considered the greatest cabinet ever. It's unbelievable.
Do you have the lineup for us?
Oh, we're going to get the lineup, but I just want to go down Mr. Tompkins for a minute. Now, remember, this man was who's going to replace the battle wound and shot Monroe. So he was governor of New York, 1807 to 1817. Okay, so you're like, yeah, okay, I like that. He was dirt poor. He was in so much debt because during the War of 1812, he straight up paid for the New York militia with his own money.
What?
Yeah, he just paid for it by himself. He was just like, we need our own military. And I like to think, no, he was young during the War of 1812. Like he was 38. I'm talking about Tompkins. So yeah. he pays for the New York militia himself. And he's just like, we're going to beat the British. He was just way too amped up. And yeah, he paid for it with all his own money.
See, he messed up. He could have learned a lesson from Miss Abigail Adams, and instead of just paying straight up for the militia, he should have been buying bonds from the state of New York.
Exactly. So then he was like, so this is disputed historically, so I want to say this here. Tompkins claims that Congress was like, yo, we'll reimburse you, we appreciate it, bro. And he was like, all right. So he started borrowing heavily to support the New York militia. And so Congress just refused to reimburse him afterwards. It's like left him on the hook. This is kind of crazy. And we talked a little bit about, the unfortunate history of Monroe and slavery. And Oak Hills, the Monroe Heritage Site, I think gives Monticello a run for its money for how upfront it is about the role of slavery in Monroe's life. And if you proportionate it, where Thomas Jefferson was just like ultra crazy wealthy person at the time who owned hundreds of slaves, and you proportionate it to Monroe, who openly talked about this broken system and this, he was not affluent. Now, that's not saying Monroe shouldn't have, freed his slaves. I'm saying there's a difference between, somebody who's worth an obscene amount of money could have simply sold all his land, and Monroe, who was not gentry, was not upper class, and openly was like, oh my God, I'm involved in this incredibly broken system. It's not a justification. It's just acknowledging that two situations can be different and both be bad.
Yeah.
But he picked Daniel Tompkins, who was like the most aggressive abolitionist in New York at the time. Like, as he's vice president, he is advocating New York to free all the slaves and abolish slavery, which they eventually do in 1827. Now, Tompkins dies in 1825, shortly after, honestly, a couple months after leaving office.
Is 99 days after his second term?
Yeah, it was like, I heard it was like 3 months, so I guess 90 days.
Yeah, sounds about right,
yeah. Do you have it? Do you have the guy up?
I might have it, yeah.
He has kind of an awesome picture up there. Yeah, he has kind of an awesome picture up there. I'm not wrong. Hold on, bring it up. No, it's a great picture. I want to be
share. Here's the share screen.
Yeah, that's a great picture.
This image?
Yeah, that looks like a man who owes so much money. That's his official portrait when he's vice president.
Yeah, something seems a little off right here.
He looks sad. Right? You couldn't even afford to pay for different colors in the paint.
Couldn't put a table behind him or a window or something?
No, that's extra money. Look at his hair. Yeah. His hair in particular is what gets me. Like, it's like a, it's like slick back, but with a little on the front.
Yeah, this this looks like Roger Sherman's, like, same, whoever painted his picture. Like, yeah. It looks like they're on the same plan.
Yeah, like, this is, look what he's wearing. He's wearing a coat. Like, he's just, like, right. a puffy shirt. And I'm willing to bet he didn't pay for all the ruffles. Like, it's probably just right up there in the collar.
It probably rented for the painting.
Yeah.
Like when you go to those old timey ones and they put you in the old outfits.
Yeah. Like, yeah, just, I love that picture. And I'm actually a huge fan of this guy. I'm not like, I actually think, I hate that he's forgotten from history because as he's vice president, he's like calling, obviously not calling, but calling New York and be like, yo, free the slaves. And it's like, your president owns slaves and has not freed the slaves himself. And he's like, oh, I don't care about that. And I do love that attitude. Like, let me fix what I can fix right now and move forward. And he was never in D.C. He was constantly getting sued by his creditors, so he had to keep going back. So he kept going back to New York to, like, argue these court cases. And eventually Monroe was like, dude, what the hell are you doing?
Did they ever figure out what the D stood for, his middle name?
No, I didn't figure that out. Did you?
No.
It's a great name.
No, nobody knows. There's no real... I think there's just some questions about it. Some have suggested Decius or Decius.
Honestly, I'm in.
Let's see. He attended Columbia College. I think they do have his records there, but yeah.
He did name one of his kids Mangle, which I thought was funny.
Mangle?
Yeah.
Like mangled, like...
Like Mangle.
Yeah,
I thought that was kind of funny. He became like a very minor politician later in his life, but yeah, he was like Mangle Tompkin. He had 8 kids, which probably didn't help the financial situation. I mean,
yeah, I guess you probably ran out of name choices too at that point.
Oh, I just meant the money, but also the name situation. R.I.P. George Foreman. He just passed away this week.
Oh man, yeah, we can bring that one up.
He was one of the coolest human beings ever to live.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's largely forgotten the history. So eventually he just, like, isn't involved in anything. And by the time he enters his second term, Monroe's second term, Monroe keeps him around. Monroe, loyal dude. He was in even more debt because he kept losing all his court cases. I tried to find, like, the original court records. There's really no Tompkin estate, really, because he became so forgotten. But... he ends up dying, he ends up abusing alcohol later in his life towards the end of the presidency, and ends up dying, we talked about a few months after the end of the Monroe administration. And I just find it interesting that you had this dude deeply indebted who's going against literally, I think, the most important policy that we see in America up until the abolition of slavery, which is the abolition of slavery, and he's advocating for it in his home state, and he's, like, he was never unelected as governor. He was a wicked popular governor. He funds the War of 1812 from the New York side, the New York militia, which, you know, did a lot of fighting. Mm-hmm. And he just gets forgotten by history. Right. Just, I don't know, it makes it kind of sad.
Yeah. I imagine if he would have gotten paid back, they maybe would have done a better job of remembering him. It feels like the stiffing him on the check was kind of the first sign that you're not going to get remembered.
Yeah, I would be. Yeah, it is kind of sad that Congress does that.
More sad that Congress does that to the person who's vice president. Like, you think that he'd have a point, or you think he'd be able to, like, you know, nudge his buddy on the shoulder and be like, "Hey, can you fix this for me, bud?"
Yeah, I mean, like, he's just it is kind of cool to see. So a lot of the reasons the founding fathers. I actually dove into this during the research. I was trying to figure out why all the founding fathers, besides Adams, died. Like destitute, like completely poor. Right. Monroe had to move into his daughter and son-in-law's house in New York. Like, that's how poor he was at the end of his life. And we're seeing it at this time because what's happening right now? The Industrial Revolution. So these founding fathers are becoming poorer because they either didn't financially invest properly, they spent way too much money trying to show how rich they were, and then now they're stuck with nothing. I don't think Monroe did that. I think Monroe was more of a... you know, middle-ish, not like middle gen. He's not gentry. Middle farming class.
The way you explained him, he sounded like more like he redistributed all of his wealth to everybody who worked on his farm.
Yeah, not to be like, too paternalistic in the viewpoint, but like, yeah, I mean, he wasn't somebody like Jefferson. He just kept buying more slaves.
Right.
Like Jefferson's like answer to not believing in slavery was to buy more slaves, which is in an insane position today.
Well, you can end slavery if you own them all, right?
Yeah.
I guess that's one way to tackle
it. Modern problems require modern solutions. that was a good one. So I want to run through his, and you mentioned earlier, I want to run through his cabinet.
Yeah.
Because this man put together, I think, the greatest cabinet of all time, outside of his indebted, never there VP. He would have been so angry if he became president. He'd be like, I'm too much stuff to do.
Right.
leading off, somebody who's still considered the greatest Secretary of State of all time, and my boy, John Quincy Adams, who I'm going to propose to Kyle right now, that we call the John Quincy series your favorite president's favorite president.
Okay, who's your favorite president?
I was going to say, like, everybody loves Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who your favorite president is. They all love JQ, hey? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they all... We're going to go through. Do you like do you like astronomy? Do you like space travel? You can thank John Quincy Adams for why we have that.
Yes.
Because he was, like, instrumental in the founding
of... You said astronomy, not astrology, right?
No, astrology. I don't believe in voodoo science. No, I was going to say something really bad. Never mind. Kyle knows what I was about to say.
I have a feeling.
William Crawford as Secretary of Treasury, which is...
Wait, who is... Oh, you said John Q. Adams. Okay, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Secretary of Treasury's who?
William Crawford. Like, I would say besides Henry Clay, the most famous, probably the most influential politician who never became president.
Really? I don't think I've ever heard of this guy either.
So we need a show. You're going to get deep dove on Mr. Billy Crawford. John C. Calhoun. Like the John C. Calhoun was Secretary of War. Attorney General was the best named man of all time, Dick Rush, Richard Rush, followed by this guy, William Wirt. The alliteration, by the way, in these names is painful. Right. And I'm not even done with all the alliteration. So both Dick Rush and William Wirt were incredibly competent attorney generals, by the way. Like, they were seen as very, very. And then we have the Secretary of Navy, because remember, there wasn't that many secretaries back then. We have Benjamin Crowninshield, who was like the mastermind of the War of 1812, being like, yo, and he's a carrier from the Madison administration. He was like, guys, get a cool idea. You know how boats are giant gunships? What if we use a giant gunship instead of shooting at boats? We shoot at the British who are walking on the shoreline. Everybody's like, what? What?
We got guns. They move around. Maybe we should use them over here.
This guy's just crazy. He's the first guy we had an egg. Like, he's coming up with ideas. There's other guys, Smith Thompson, who served from 1818 to 1823. Again, very highly regarded as a really good Secretary of the Navy. And then the last alliteration name, a Samuel Southard, who served the last like 18-ish months. Spoken very highly of. There's not like a huge depth of historical records on him, as in like that I can say, like, oh, him and Monroe used to play golf together or something like that. His whole entire cabinet was basically seen as like the greatest cabinet ever. What's funny is they were all wicked, wicked, brilliant, and they argued all the time. It was a very argumentative process. And at one point...
Was it contentious arguing, or was it just like getting to an actual consensus? Like, they actually spent the time getting to speak their minds.
They all got a chance. He was very quiet. He nodded a lot, but he wasn't like... he's not Calvin Coolidge, right? He's not just not talking. There's a apocryphal story of a parrot like being at one of his like some event, because apparently there's just animals running around DC, just wild animals like inside of these events.
Wait till we get to Andrew Jackson's parrot.
Yes. And this parrot, when Monroe walked in, said, you know, long live Monroe, and Monroe like just bowed at the parrot. And somebody made a comment. There was like, it was a in a newspaper, and the writer was like, only for Monroe could he be outspoken by a parrot. Kind of like that. So Adams and Crawford didn't really get along that well. And at one point, they refused to speak directly to each other. So Monroe had to serve as their go-between during cabinet meetings. So like, they're having a meeting, and Crawford have something to say, and he just turns and say it to the president. He's like, can you tell Adams this? And like, Adams.
Could you tell that turd monger over there?
He, He once said managing his cabinet, this is a direct quote from him, he once said managing his cabinet was trying to unite fire and ice. But what's crazy is his cabinet pretty much stuck around the entire time.
Yeah.
Also, my favorite thing is John Quincy Adams decided to keep a journal of every time William Crawford rolled his eyes.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Which,
you know, that's a different level.
I would have done that. But I've done that. I have done that, actually. I've kept journals in the military of every time like somebody would make a certain face or a noise that I hated just to keep myself awake during training sessions.
You're going to love JQA.
I'm going to love this.
But want to hear something crazy? His Secretary of State, his Secretary of Treasury, and his Secretary of War stayed the entire two terms. That's amazing.
So when it gets time to give the rankings out here, I think when we get to leadership, because you mentioned the sign of intelligence being hiring smart people around you.
Yes.
I view that as a sign of humility, recognizing that you don't have to be the smartest person. And there is a big sign of intelligence. But a sign of good leadership is being able to get a bunch of people who are at the top of their fields to be able to work together in a room. Yeah. Especially when it sounds like it was as contentious as this. And so I think that's a huge feather in his cap to be able to lead a room like this.
And it's funny, I've read a couple historians on this, specifically, exactly what you said, Kyle, a couple historians. I was curious, how did he do this? Like, this is a very, Washington couldn't keep Jefferson in his administration for all 8 years. Like, that's crazy. No president was really able to create such a unified cabinet. And so I fell down a little cool rabbit hole. So we all know that Monroe was appointed Secretary of State in 1811. Under Madison.
Yeah, we all know that, obviously.
We know he was Secretary of State under Madison. I feel like that's pretty well known. Yes. All right. It is weird that I said the exact date. April 2nd, 1811. We're coming up on celebrating.
Yeah. Roughly at 2:05 p.m.
And he was a very successful Secretary of State, all that stuff. And I'm not going to dive into that. We already know what happened during that time period. But I found something interesting. So he became, as Secretary of State, he also became acting Secretary of War. Hmm. So what happened is that after when the British forces burnt down D.C. in 1814, Madison's cabinet was in a mess. Secretary of State John Armstrong under Madison, they pretty much forced him to resign because he way underestimated the British intent. He was like, they'll never burn the White House down. That was his take. I don't know if he said that, but he probably did.
Standing on the lawn of the White House to hand in his resignation to poor Madison.
As the building's burning in the background. Madison didn't really know what to do, which is a rarity for Madison. I don't want to make it sound like Madison was like, whoa! No, Madison was like, oh my God, how am I going to appoint a new Secretary of War while we're at war? The White House is burnt down. So he turned to Monroe and was like, hey, Monroe, you're the Secretary of War now. And he's like, cool. So who's the Secretary of State? He's like, also you. That's never happened in U.S. history since then. We never had a Secretary of Defense and Secretary of State. You're combining the two most powerful positions that aren't the... I mean, I think somebody would argue the Secretary of State's more powerful than the VP in many cases.
Thank you, John Adams.
Yeah, thank you, John Adams, who just everybody hated, despite being the only person who stands up long-run in history. Right. He gave Monroe, he was a Secretary of State and Secretary of War. Now, what's cool is that this was an interim. This is not like when, you know, when a new president comes in and they appoint like somebody to be the head of the DOJ and they become the head of like some other agency until the new guy comes in.
Middle of a term, right?
Middle of a term, middle of a war.
Yeah.
And so Monroe takes the reins and he immediately rebuilds the army. He secures funding through Congress. And he coordinates this defense around Baltimore and pretty much creates like this mid-Atlantic barrier. I don't know what to call it. Like, I also want to call it the Atlantic Wall, but that has a connotation with a different group of people. But he basically forms this, he basically cuts the United States in half, creating this like military buffer that he knew they only had like 6,700 well-trained Napoleonic troops.
He's basically just trying to spread out there as thin as possible and... You can take some land, but we're going to cede it to you, but we're going to make it very difficult to keep. We're going to spread you out as thin as possible. You're not going to be able to hold anything.
Yeah, it's a...
It's like a delaying action.
Yeah, right. Create dilemmas, not problems. You know, that was his move. And then he went into the military bureaucracy and basically completely reformed the military, getting rid of this idea of like this kind of proto-British officership role.
Oh, you mean like the way that just being rich and politically connected gets you a command of troops?
Yes, yeah, that's exactly it.
So you've turned it into a merit-based system.
Yes, as opposed to Cromwell at Washington. Now, Kyle, this is, you would probably know this better than me, but some people, enough people to where I want to bring this up, credit Monroe with the establishment of the NCO Corps.
Really?
Which, I think I've said this to you before, you know, historically speaking, is why the United States is, it's like logistics and NCO Corps are two of the huge reasons why the U.S. is considered such a formidable military power throughout history. But I thought that was kind of cool, that like, this idea of him being like, no, decentralize it, let the people on the ground make the decision. Also, just because you owned a bunch of land in Virginia does not mean you know how to manage troops.
It's funny. I thought the NCOs have been around basically since officers existed. The NCOs are the ones that keep the officers who have no combat experience or no real experience leading troops because they were just kind of thrust into there based on their pedigree. They're the ones that kept them from getting everyone killed.
Yeah, so there's always been an NCO Corps, the term Lance Corporal, which I think only Marine Corps uses the term Lance Corporal anymore.
I think you're right, yeah.
That comes from the corporal who was holding the lance from like medieval times. This was more empowering.
Staff Sergeant, probably, similar to? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, this was about empowering the NCO Corps. Monroe broke with his party and advocated for a very strong federal government, a very strong military, a federally funded military, probably because he's the guy who had to fix everything. And then he also pushed very strongly for a national military academy and national infrastructure related to the military to improve war readiness.
Though, so is he the reason why we had the Citadel and all those other like Army, Navy schools?
He was the first guy to bring it up. Like, guys, we should really have like a place that produces merit-based officers. But as we'll cover during his actual presidency, we're in his early presidency right now. He actually during infrastructure bills, he actually submitted 14 points to Congress, basically saying he didn't believe the federal government had the right to spend on federal infrastructure.
Mm.
But before we jump in, I want to talk a little bit about Elizabeth Monroe,
because we haven't even brought her up yet, have we?
Yeah, and I think this would be a little bit of a good time to bring her up.
When did they meet? Is this one of the first ones to have met in office?
She was 17, he was 27. Exactly. Yeah, so he met Elizabeth in 1785. Wow, he met her young.
Wow.
Wow, okay, yeah, 1785. Wow, I didn't realize they were married that long. She died in 1830.
Okay.
So 45 years of marriage, that's a long time, 45 years together. Monroe was in New York City, and this New York City was the capital when we were under the Irish Confederation. His wife's father, Lawrence Courtright, was a merchant, and he was actually a loyalist during the Revolutionary War. And I find that funny. Imagine, like, you're daughter marry some dude that your boy shot.
Right.
And despite her being British, they fell in love very quickly. They got married in early 1786, when he was 27, she was 17, and they decided to settle in Fredericksburg, Virginia. They had three kids that we talked about. Most of lost to the historic record.
But just goes to point out, though, like, I think you said it. There was no real contention with the British. It was more just we didn't want to be ruled by them anymore. And I think that kind of illustrates that point. Yeah, it was probably pretty easy to forgive and forget because there really wasn't a whole lot of bad blood between us and like the everyday people of Britain, right?
Oh, no. We were basically seen as the same culture. And the rest of the world thought we had the same culture. And that plays into a huge part of the Monroe Doctrine, too.
Mm-hmm.
They get married in 1786, and they're enjoying married life. They're doing, they're enjoying everything going on. But then in 1791, the U.S. experiences its first major sex scandal, which I have been alluding to this entire time.
Finally,
the Reynolds affair. Everybody who's still with us, yes, I made you guys go through a prolonged period of me explaining the picture. I didn't want to talk about this before introducing all the characters and introducing what's going on because I want this framed as like, This guy just got elected and appointed this crazy... the first episode to me, Kyle, was like, let's talk about who Monroe was. Because I think we don't know who he is. I think he's the first president. Nobody knows really who he is as a person. And then I was like, okay, people know him as a president. Let's talk about him as a president. He's been this side character the entire time. The first time we talked about Monroe was us talking about Madison beating him because a bunch of Protestants and Baptists were like, yo, I like Monroe because he's going to leave me alone.
He's wrote us letters.
Right. And then we talked about him with the War of Louisiana Purchase. He was a diplomat who negotiated it, but it was Madison who handled the Secretary of State stuff. And so I wanted to be like, okay, we have Monroe here. Yes, he's the president. Yes, he's this like war hero and this interesting guy. And he's the first Virginian who's not part of the gentry to get elected and all this cool stuff. But I didn't want to bury the lead I wanted to get to the Reynolds affair. So in 1791, the Treasury Secretary Alexander Hamilton had an affair with this woman, Maria Reynolds. She was married at the time. Her husband, Hamilton needed to.
Caused a lot of problems, didn't he?
I like Hamilton. All right. I think he's important, but I feel like he was his biggest enemy. He just kept doing stupid things for such a smart man. So, Maria Reynolds' husband, James Reynolds, he found out, and his immediate response, finding out his wife's cheating on him with the Treasury Secretary at the time, he starts blackmailing Hamilton for hush money. And so Hamilton ends up paying several large bribes to James Reynolds to quiet the affair. This goes on for about a year. And then James Monroe gets tapped. At this point, he's serving in Congress as a rep. He was one of three lawmakers charged with investigating financial corruption at the Treasury. And Monroe and his colleagues discovered all these suspicious payments between Hamilton and James Reynolds. Now, they think what's happened is thinking they just caught Hamilton embezzlement, Monroe goes over and confronts him. Yeah. Now, I have a vague memory of reading about the Reynolds affair as a side note. Right. Years ago. And in my head, I was still thinking about James Monroe looking like a James Madison.
Being tiny. Now you're picturing...
Now you walk over, and Alexander Hamilton, who I like, but his big, what did I do in the Revolution Wars? I managed some people at a little battle, because I really wanted to do it, and I'm not trying to disrespect Alexander Hamilton, but it's not the same as getting shot crossing the Delaware and bleeding out of an artery as some dude shoves his finger in your shoulder to pinch your artery. Those are different things. Did Hamilton want to lead from the front? Again, not the same thing as being involved in amphibious landing with muskets. Those are different things. right? And just imagine amphibious landing with muskets. That has to be the scariest experience. Why would I prefer to have a sword? why would that be? So Hamilton confronts him and is like, yo, man, you're embezzling? Also, are you having relations with this woman? And you're getting blackmailed? Dude, what's going on here?
Wait, is he still?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because there's...
You might as well, if you're paying for it, you might as well keep paying.
Yeah, no, right? If you already dug the hole, might as well keep digging. So, Hamilton admitted to the affair but denied financial corruption, saying he only paid Reynolds to keep the affair quiet. Now, I want to stop for a moment right here. Set the scene. So Monroe, Hamilton's normal size, kind of smaller, a little pudgy dude, right? And you have scarred up war hero Monroe, who's like, hey, dude, I'm in charge. I have congressional power. My boy, George Washington, I was chilling on his boat. He selected me to chill on his boat when we went and kicked the crap out of the Hessians on Christmas Eve. We were popping Coca-Colas with Santa Claus and sending some Hessians to meet their maker.
I used to carry him around when his horse got tired.
Yeah, right. This unit of a man, and now he has congressional authority. And he's over. He's like, dude, I see all these suspicious payments. Dude, what are you doing? And Hamilton responds quick here. Hamilton doesn't say I use my own money. From how I read it, what was said was Hamilton admitted to the affair, denied corruption, but said he was only paying Reynolds to keep the affair quiet. Which is, he's not saying he's paying with his own money. He just used the term
he's making the payments to keep it, to keep the government from having a scandal.
Yes. And
he was doing it to protect him, obviously, right?
Yes. So Hamilton, now what gets found out is that, no, there's no evidence that Hamilton could have worded this better.
Yeah.
But there's no evidence that he was using federal money. So Hamilton admits to the affair but denied the financial corruption, and Monroe keeps copies of Hamilton's confession, never releases them, but in So 5 years go by, in 1897, political rivals of Hamilton, possibly including people who knew Monroe, leaked the documents to the press. Mm-hmm. There's no evidence that it was Monroe who leaked them. You have this huge scandal that explodes. Hamilton publishes a 95-page pamphlet confessing to the affair, but defending his honor.
Defending your honor. That poor woman's honor, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, just his honor, right? Hamilton believes Monroe leaked the documents. And again, there's not anything part of the historical record that shows he did. Doesn't mean he didn't. I can't prove a negative, right? There's smarter historians than me can't prove it either.
Doesn't sound like Monroe's MO, though, from everything we've learned about him today. He doesn't seem like the type of person to just do that out of the blue.
No, in Hamilton, and by the way, Monroe in 1794 was in France. From 1794 to 1796, he was in France. So, like, I don't think Monroe leaked them. I think Monroe would have just like, oh, you want to fight? Let's fight. I don't think he would have been like.
I'm guessing he probably forgot all about it after he'd solved it. He seems like the type of guy that once it's squashed, once the thing is taken care of, he's not going to think about it anymore.
Yeah, I think he's like, all right, that's what happened. You didn't steal. All right, I don't give a crap. That was stupid what you did, but like, I'm not the morality police.
Yeah.
Monroe, he's probably like, I own slaves. I'm not going to yell at this guy. Like, I would not doubt that the way that crop, knowing Monroe's.
Did he go over there with Governor Morris?
No. I cannot wait for the. Can we do like a 3-hour super episode just on the entire life of Governor Morris?
I mean,
just
we can. Horrible. Well, I think we've already done a short on him.
Oh, he's the best. He's insane. So Hamilton, I don't know if people know this, but Hamilton loved to challenge people to duels.
So he was one of those. Yeah. Kind of a big mouth.
Yeah. So this argument, Hamilton believed Monroe leaked documents. So in 1797, when Monroe comes back to the U.S., he personally confronts Hamilton. And the argument, they're screaming at each other, they're yelling at each other. Finally, Hamilton goes, I love this. Hamilton looks at Monroe and goes, I challenge you to a duel. And Monroe just looks at him and goes, direct quote, I'm ready. Get your pistols.
Oh, God, I love that.
And they end up getting, like, which is the, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That is the best. Oh, that's the best. And
I would love to have seen his eyes.
Yeah, their aides ripped them apart. Yeah. And apparently Monroe was like, just. Like Monroe's like, well, either, like, I'll beat you up here, I'll go shoot you the like, you know, either one, I'm fine. Like, again, war hero, not like I sat in a little tent and like managed the men. Like, no, guy is a brawler, and yeah, so he ends up having this actually damages the Reynolds affair damages Hamilton's reputation probably more than anything else in his entire life. Not even his arguments with Jefferson or his disagreements with Burr, and Monroe. Maintained to his death that he never leaked the papers. It's a one-off incident. Yeah, maybe he could have, and he's lying. But if you look at all of Monroe's life, I would bet a lot of money he never did. And they hated each other up until Hamilton's death in 1804 from a duel. Stop challenging people to duels. Yeah. That he also, yeah, that he lost.
Obviously,
but. Sticking with our girl, Beth Monroe, I do want to put a little aside. And it's important that Elizabeth Monroe is actually seen as in her time, mm-hmm. she was probably seen more on the level of Dolly Madison. It's weird that Elizabeth Monroe's kind of lost to history a little bit.
Well, you said they were married for 45 years, so you started to tell. Was there anything notable about her during the presidency's term or anything that we should bring up?
She brought in like a kind of a European flair that was largely derived from the fact that the White House burnt down and they had to replaster the walls, they had to redo the entire place. So they were decorating the White House as they were repairing rooms. Mm-hmm. And what we'll dive into right here is like Elizabeth spent a lot of time in France, even though she was British, she spent a lot of time in France with Monroe when he was over there on a diplomatic mission for about 2.5 years. And she fell in love with the style of like the French cafes, the style of French diplomacy, and a lot of European furniture. So they brought back a lot of European furniture. They donated to the White House, they decorated the rooms and that. And many local diplomats and foreign diplomats came in and said it was bizarre to see like this, you know, very beautiful European furniture mixed in with like plastered walls. So yeah, she really codified a lot of like the first lady stuff that we really don't see major deviations from until kind of the 1900s. And a lot of times we look at history as very flat. I think I say that, Kyle, you and I talk a lot. You hear me say that a lot. Like, we look at history as if it all happened at one time, where No, I mean, Dolly Madison had all this great stuff and all these great plans, but her house burnt down and it didn't. It never got repaired. Like the
3 years. 3 years it set.
Yeah. Also, cool thing about Monroe, he rented a house when he was when the White House was not when the White House wasn't available. He paid for it himself. He didn't like pass that on to the taxpayer.
Where did James Madison and Dolly stay when the after the White House burned down?
I should probably look that up. There's an estate called the Octagon.
That's a great name too.
That's
where Hamilton liked to hang out, I think.
Hamilton sounds like the loudmouth at a boxing club or boxing gym that probably doesn't have a super good record.
I'll punch you in the face. I'll punch you right in the mouth. No, you won't.
No, you won't. If you do, I'll beat you up. So there's a place called the Octagon that had different estates on there. That's actually where Monroe stayed too, but he rented his house directly. But before we get back to Mr. Monroe's administration and what and going forward from that, I want to talk a little bit about something that is maybe a bizarre fact. So Elizabeth Monroe is the most popular first lady in France. Mm. She is, even to this day, polls incredibly high. As like she is seen as like this amazing figure of woman power, and is seen as this like amazing diplomat.
Even today?
Even today.
That's weird, because I think most of us don't even... I never heard of Elizabeth Monroe until this morning.
Yeah, until several minutes ago.
Yes.
Kyle, the show would be way less funny if you ever start to... If we ever break the rule that you're not... You have to do research, too. If I ever shared, like, the notes, I think the show would become way less funny.
Oh, God, because... yeah. Honestly, most of... Like the best part about doing these is after we finish a president, then I get to go watch all the drunk histories on YouTube.
Well, see, that was one of my favorite, because you have a very eclectic, you're very, very eclectic in interest. That's why we get along so well. I'm always scared that you're just going to be like, oh, yeah, no, I just watched something on YouTube. I was like driving home or something. I listened to this video. I'm like, oh, no, that was supposed to be like the, I was so nervous about the mac and cheese one. Like, I was so nervous.
I could tell we have the same like news stories that pop up on our feeds. Because before we started, I think you're talking about something that was on your, something you just learned about with satellites, was it, or? What was it you said this morning?
What were we ranting about?
I don't remember. It was something you said. I was like, oh, yeah, I saw that story, too.
it's funny. So, yeah, I'm always scared that we're going to end up watching the same
half of the things I see. Half the things I see on YouTube, I'm like, what if this is where Eric learned about that?
You know what's funny? I just like learning stuff. I don't care what the topic is. It's very, probably problematic at a certain point.
I think so. For me, I mean, I watch way too many videos on forging and wood turning, and I don't even own a lathe.
Dude, people who can do that is wild to me. Like, people who are that, I can't build anything. It's so bad. In 1794, now, a lot of the history buffs who are listening to this, the Reign of Terror is going on in France, and, you know, Monroe's over there. They're executing kings and Maximilian Robespierre, and they have the Committee on Public Safety, which is the most Orwellian name thing of all time.
I know, right?
They're trying to make 10-day weeks. They're trying to basically abolish religion. Like, it's getting wild over there. And Marquise de Lafayette, the very famous, the very, very famous philosopher, the hero of the American and French Revolution, he was imprisoned in 1792 by Austrian forces after fleeing France, because he was seen as this, like, very, 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 very bizarrely, he was seen as this, like, pro-monarch, mm-hmm. where it's like, dude, he just fought in the two revolutions to overthrow monarchs. Like, how are you getting that opinion? His wife, Adrian. oh, my God. I want to make sure I put... Now that I said Adrian, my brain does not want to do that. Hold on one second.
Is it Yo Adrian?
Yo Adrian. No, Adrian. I did say that, right?
Yeah.
Adrian de Lafayette. I know my brain did not want that to work. So his wife, Adrian de Lafayette, and a few other people, a few other noble women. I don't know why I'm like tossing my hand as if like, don't worry about those people. I just don't have their names. but including her mother and grandmother were arrested by the Jacobins and sent to La Petite Force prison in France. I like how all French names, I'm sure that was a horrible prison, but
it's not a great pronunciation either, I don't think.
How are you supposed to pronounce it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know, but it sounded wrong. I'm pretty sure that's going to end up in a comment somewhere.
It should be in the comments. Adrian's mother and grandmother actually ended up getting guillotined, and she was awaiting execution. So, but Elizabeth Monroe, you know, and at this point, by the way, by this point, James Monroe is appointed, like, officially, he's a U.S. minister to France. He's not just doing a diplomatic mission, replacing our boy, Gouverneur Morris, who will just continue to pop up because he's the Forrest Gump of American history. I'm surprised that he's not involved in, like, the war, of, like, the Spanish-American War. Like, he's 115. And so he replaces Governor Morris, who was seen as, like, too sympathetic to the French aristocracy. So Monroe and Elizabeth, you know, they get over there. They were already over there, but now they have, like, a lot of power. Don't forget, like, the French are still, like, you know, they still like America. They're still, not that they ever didn't like America. France is actually, like, one of those countries where we, like, never fought a war against France or anything like that. But so America still has a lot of sway over there, even though it's only 1794. Like, we're not this powerful country. We still have the quasi wars are kind of still starting to brew. But to the average French citizen, they're not thinking about the quasi wars and stuff like that. USS Constellation, you know, sinking, like, building super ships to sink all their ships. But Monroe and Elizabeth were deep connected to the Lafayette family, and Lafayette had a close relationship with George Washington because of the American Revolution. So Elizabeth Monroe took it upon herself to personally visit Adrian. I keep saying Ardeen. I don't know why. I'm thinking of the forest.
The Ardennes?
Yeah, Ardennes. Did I pronounce that? Yeah. I don't believe you. You're right, but I don't believe you.
I've watched enough World War II documentaries. I'm pretty sure it's the Ardennes.
Yeah, but is it a British guy saying aluminium versus aluminum?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Actually, you know how long it took me to realize that those are the same metals?
It took me a while, too.
It was Top Gear. It was because of Jeremy Clarkson. He was the one. I was like, wait, is this like some new carbon fiber or something? It's aluminium I've never heard of.
I like that. That's the same way. There's an extra oxygen molecule bonded to it. So she personally visits Adrian in prison. She actually rode her carriage publicly through Paris to make this visible. And this sent a strong message to the revolutionary French government at the time. You know, the wife of the U.S. ambassador was checking in on Lafayette's wife, which basically showed that the Americans were putting soft diplomatic pressure against harming her. The French government was also worried about its relationship with the U.S. at this time, and pretty much were like, oh, crap, is this going to, like, if we execute
her, is this going to be a thing?
Yeah. So it was literally, like, a few days after this very public visit, Adrian was released from prison, and she later traveled to Austria, where she negotiated her husband's release and helped him secure his freedom in 1797, which I think is left off here. Like, we all know anybody who studies American history knows Marquis de Lafayette. But I think it's kind of cool that his wife was, like, in prison, gets freed by the Monroes, and then she goes to a hostile nation, Austria at the time, and negotiates her husband's freedom. Like, that's awesome. Why are we talking about this?
Right, yeah.
So she's, to this day, she's very, very popular in France. At that time, she had La Belle Americaine, was the beautiful American, is what she was called. And, you know, her influence even led to changes in White House protocol. When she became First Lady, she adopted this more, as I mentioned earlier, this more European style of etiquette because she loved her time in France. And to this day, France still names buildings and streets after the Monroes.
That's crazy.
Yeah, she's really, really cool. And I want to, after I told you all that cool stuff, because I didn't want to lead with it, she suffered from severe epilepsy her entire life.
It seems to be a kind of a common thing too, huh? It's not the first time we've heard that.
Yeah, it's, she was a really, really cool lady. And she became, again, one of, like, one of the founding mothers, especially one of the founding people of how,
We need to make a note to do a little deeper dive onto her, I think. At least get her. We need to get her a short or something.
So to get back to our starting point of James Monroe forming the Avengers of a political cabinet, Monroe ends up getting accused of being too sympathetic to the French government. So, you know, he gets fired, straight up fired
in 1797.
Now that has to stay in there. Yeah, that has to stay in there. So he gets fired. He writes this book called A View of Conduct of the Executive. It basically attacks the Federalist Administration. Ends up becoming a hero of the Democratic Republicans. 1790 becomes governor of Virginia, which we already talked about. We did a whole episode on Louisiana Purchase. He goes and negotiates the Louisiana Purchase. He was actually the dude who, when he went to Napoleon, was like, yeah, so you want to, instead of getting New Orleans, can I get, like, all of it?
All of it, yeah.
And him and Robert Livingston, like, negotiated for it.
Yeah.
He then gets appointed to be the Minister of Britain until 1807. And, you know, he helps resolve many of the maritime disputes that happened during that time period. He did try really hard to prevent the War of 1812, but, you know, it obviously didn't work. And he came back and, you know, he was Secretary of State, Secretary of War. And then we get back to him defeating Rufus King and forming a group of very type A, but, you know, very productive cabinet.
Type A cabinet. I like that. Well, I think that's probably going to be a good place to call it for part two. So please join us next week. We start diving into the other notable events that define Monroe's presidency. And in the meantime, we want to hear from you. What do you think of the effectiveness of his term? Have you started reworking your personal Mount Rushmore yet? You can email us at chinashopproductions@gmail.com, or you can visit the website at thebuckstartsherepodcast.com to stay up to date. We'll see you all next week.